Good morning. It's time to read the Mason City Globe Gazette for December 24th. I'm Vicki, and I will be at the microphone for the next hour. We are pleased to be with you. This broadcast is made possible through a partnership between the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service and 97.9 FM KCMR Radio. Here are today's headlines on the front page of the Globe Gazette. Dodd brings Clear Lake girls basketball the gift of offensive depth. Krugerrand, featured in annual Salvation Army auction, shows up in red kettle. Iowa, Iowa State prepare for respective bowl games. Mason City Schools settle lawsuit filed by former HR director. Christmas comes to the Cerro Gordo County Jail. And Clear Lake Beach Project awarded January 6th. Today's weather will be mostly cloudy, wind out of the south, 6 to 12 miles per hour, with a high of 43 degrees. Expect less than 2 hours of sunshine with average relative humidity 85% and poor drying conditions. Considerable clouds tonight with a shower in spots late. Chance of participation 40% with average relative humidity 90%. Areas of fog tomorrow morning, cloudy with spotty drizzle. Now, with the first story, we have Christmas comes to the Cerro Gordo County Jail. There's a picture with a member of the Seventh-day Adventist Church in Mason City visits with two Cerro Gordo County Jail inmates at a Christmas behind bars gift-giving event on Saturday, December 21st. Holiday program, a welcome tradition for inmates. When thinking of whom to give Christmas presents, jail inmates are usually not the first people to pop into one's mind. Yet the jail is exactly where a Mason City church has delivered gifts. On the weekend before Christmas for the past 8 to 10 years, inmates at the Cerro Gordo County Jail have received bags of candy, socks, fruit, and Bibles from members of the Mason City Seventh-day Adventist Church. Joyce Pinkey, one of the project organizers and member of the church, said the idea came to a fellow member, Jean Hackman, after she saw a church in Rochester was doing something similar for the jail there. It is similar to the nationwide program, Christmas Behind Bars, which focuses more on prisons and is broadcast on the Seventh-day Adventist Three Angels Broadcasting Network. We can pray with people there and we can give them magazines. We give them Christian literature to read. We give them snacks, Pinky said. Jail Administrator Andrew Steenblock said the program is a good thing for both the church members and the inmates. Knowing that there is someone else out there that cares about them, and with the church, one of their missions is to spread goodwill and do good things, so this is their way to reaching out to people who may not have someone to do something good for them, Steenblock said. The public can't typically bring Christmas gifts to jail inmates, according to Steenblock, but the church is an exception. It's something we set up with them, he said. We know them. We know we don't have to worry about any ill intent or breach in security or safety with them. Jail staff still always checks the gift bags to make sure they don't contain something inmates can't have. All food items must be store-bought, Steenblock said. We want to make sure what it is. We want to know who can and can't have it, he said. Last thing we want are some medical issues because of something like that. The gift bags are handed to the inmates by correctional officers as the church members talk with the inmates, offering them words of encouragement and sometimes praying with them. This sometimes leads to lasting relationships, such as becoming pen pals or conducting Bible study over the phone, according to Pinky. Steenblok said the church tries to reach out to the ones who are in jail for an indeterminate amount of time. Those are the primary ones that would benefit from it, rather than the ones that came in on a public intoxication charge, and we know he's going to get out. He's not going to be sitting there, he said. This year, Sheila, 31, who declined to have her last name published, and Justin Glidden, 32, were among the inmates. Sheila said the gifts are something to look forward to and help inmates keep faith and have hope. It's good to see somebody actually have spirit left. No matter what they've been through, they always have spirit, she said. Glidden, who's happened to be in jail during the past four Christmas seasons, said he thinks it's wonderful that the church comes to the jail and gives gifts to the inmates. The last year I was here, I showed up, and I don't know, it gives people hope, he said. The gifts really boost the morale of some of the inmates, also, Glidden said. There's people in here who don't get nothing, he said. They don't have any families out there. They don't have anybody. And when the church comes and shows up and does that, it just gives them more hope. We all just kind of waiting for that end date to get out of here, he said. As long as people aren't fighting back there, it's a good day. Jail officer Jamie Groven said the project is a good cause. You see the positivity on our end, on the inmates' end, and they seem to be grateful for it, so it's nice that the church can do that, she said. It's really a rewarding day because they are so appreciative, Pinky said. They really appreciate somebody coming at this time of year. We want to see everyone saved, and sometimes when you're in jail or prison, it gives you some time to think and maybe turn your life over to God, she said. I guess that's our main thing, to lead someone closer to God and to show them that God still loves them no matter what you do. Next we have Mason City Schools settle lawsuit filed by former HR director. A lawsuit filed by the Mason City Schools human resource director alleging gender and wage discrimination and retaliation has been settled. A press release issued by the district on Monday morning says its insurance carrier sought to resolve the lawsuit filed in July 2018 by Jody Anderson to avoid the cost and disruption protracted litigation can cause. An exact amount of compensation Anderson sought was not listed in the original petition, and the settlement is under a protection order, according to court documents. The district continues to deny any wrongdoing toward Ms. Anderson, the district wrote in its release. The district's insurance carrier will pay the settlement. Anderson, who worked as the district's HR director from July 2015 to June 2017, named Superintendent Dave Verstig, School Board Vice President Jody Draper, HR Director Tom Drzymski, and the school district in the civil lawsuit filed Friday in Cerro Gordo County District Court. Drzymski was dropped from the suit on September 7th. The court ordered Draper and Verstig dropped in January 2019. Anderson, whose starting salary was $80,000, began looking at salary structures and standards for administration compensation with then-Superintendent Anita Mickett in August 2015, the lawsuit stated. The lawsuit states it appeared men were being paid more than women for the same categories of work. Anderson first mentioned her concern about the differences in pay between men and women with then interim superintendent Michael Pinza, then school board president Jana Arndt, and then school board vice president Lori Lala in June 2016, according to the lawsuit. That lawsuit lists a timeline regarding pay raises for school district employees. In June 2017, Penka told Anderson she wasn't receiving a raise because the school board did not like how she had received her raises in the past, court documents said. Anderson's wage was frozen at $87,550, according to the lawsuit. Draper came into Anderson's office on June 19, 2017, and told her she sent an email to other school board members asking for Anderson's termination. She told Anderson she wanted her to know about her desire to terminate her because there was an open records request from the media to view board members' emails, and defendant Draper was afraid her email would come out to the newspaper, according to the lawsuit. On June 13, 2017, the Globe-Gazette filed an open records request with the district for school board members' emails regarding salaries for administrators, department heads, and the finance department. Anderson resigned in July 2017 after she decided not to renew her contract. In late 2017, school board members hired Draminski as the human resources director and agreed to pay him about $23,000 more than Anderson. Anderson complained about the hire to Verstig, who acknowledged the fact that they were going to have to pay a male candidate much more money than Anderson, the lawsuit said. The lawsuit alleges Draminski, who does not have any experience in working in schools and had personal relationships with two board members, was offered the position over two qualified female applicants. The school district argued that Anderson received more than $7,500 in excess pay without board approval, confirmed by a re-audit by the state auditor's office. It also stated Anderson voluntarily resigned from the district, despite multiple attempts to convince her to stay after her notice of resignation. District officials also noted Draminski, who served as the chief administrative officer for Cerro Gordo County for more than 20 years, has significantly more public sector human resources experience than Ms. Anderson. The next article we have is Clear Lake Beach Project awarded January 6th. Clear Lake received bids from four companies. Four bids were submitted for the second phase of the Clear Lake Beach Enhancement Project. Excuse me. The city received bids from Dean Snyder Construction of Clear Lake, Henkel Construction of Mason City, Peterson Construction of Webster City, and Sandy Construction of Humboldt on Thursday. Peterson had the lowest base bid at $1,033,000, followed by Dean Snyder at $1,112,237. Hinkle at $1,131,000, and Sandy at $1,220,581, according to the bid tabulation provided by RDG Planning and Design. Bids were also submitted for three alternates, including a cast-in-place concrete wall with manufactured stone veneer and cast stone cap in lieu of dry-stacked boulder walls, cast-in-place concrete wall with natural stone veneer and cast stone cap in lieu of dry-stacked boulder walls and additional plants and landscaping. The estimated cost of the project was $1,206,344, with the cast-in-place concrete wall with manufactured stone veneer and cast stone cap in lieu of dry-stacked boulder walls and additional plants and landscaping. Peterson's bid, including the two alternates, totaled $1,087,000, while Dean Snyder's was $1,112,000. 130,417. Hinkle's was 1,170,100. And Sandy's was 1,263,796. The Clear Lake City Council will act on the bids, including the alternates, at its January 6th meeting, Clear Lake City Administrator Scott Flory said. The second phase of the beach enhancement project features the construction of a splash pad, a new restroom facility, a sunshade shelter, landscaping improvements, and lighting. The splash pad will be located northwest and southwest of the new restroom facility, and it will contain three zones that can be activated individually. Each zone comprises water features that are appropriate for different age groups. The restroom facility will have two stalls for both men and women, as well as drinking fountains. It will also store the mechanical equipment for the splash pad, as well as the lake aeration pumps. The sun canopy will be positioned between the water treatment plant and the beach at the former site of the playground equipment. A committee comprising members of the City Council, city staff, and community organizations have been working with RDG Planning and Design of Des Moines since June. The city hired the firm for up to 11% or $176,000 of its construction budget, according to the agreement. The project was identified as a capital improvement in Clear Lake's 2020 budget. It will replace the original splash pad that was among nearly 400,000 in city beach improvements completed in 2007. In November, Dean Snyder Construction completed the first phase of the project, which cost about $237,000, including water main improvements and demolition of the restroom facility and pump shed. The Iowa Department of Natural Resources lake aeration pumps and associated equipment previously housed in the pump shed are being stored through the winter in a temporary building constructed this fall. The DNR's equipment will be relocated to the city's new restroom facility next summer. The total cost of Phase 1 and 2 is estimated at $1.4 million. It's being paid for by Clear Lake's general fund that will be reimbursed by the city's tax increment financing fund for capital improvement as approved by the City Council. Residents will have an opportunity to weigh in on the second phase of the project at a public hearing set for 6 p.m. on January 6th at City Hall, which is located at 15 North 6th Street. Work is anticipated to begin on the project in 2020 when weather allows and be completed June 22nd. Okay, next we have Kruger Rand, featured in annual Salvation Army auction, shows up in a red kettle. The gold Kruger Rand that is the centerpiece of the Salvation Army annual auction showed up in a red kettle bucket last weekend. Captain Kenyon Civil said someone put a 1982 South African Kruger Rand coin in a kettle at Hy-Vee East sometime between 10 a.m. and 8 p.m. on Saturday. The Rock Sirius Lodge was manning the kettle at the time. The coin is 1 ounce of 99.999% pure gold, and the value of it depends on the price of gold. It has been several years since the Salvation Army of North Iowa has received a gold coin. Previously, a coin was received every year for 20 years in a row, but 1 year they just stopped. The Salvation Army said in a Monday release that it's grateful for the donation and hopeful it will start a new tradition. This year's Salvation Army Christmas campaign goal is 253,300. It is still short of its goal. The money raised during the Christmas campaign is used throughout the year to help those in need in North Iowa. And there's a picture of Salvation Army Christmas Chairman Tim Fleming holds up the Krugerrand coin as auctioneer Frank Fox calls out prices during the 2015 auction at the Southbridge Mall in Mason City. Next, we're going to have Looking Back. Today is Tuesday, December 24th, the 358th day of 2019. There are 7 days left in the year, and this is Christmas Eve. Today's highlight in history, on December 24th, 1968, the Apollo 8 astronauts orbiting the moon read passages from the Old Testament book of Genesis during a Christmas Eve telecast. On this date in 1809, legendary American frontiersman Christopher Kit Carson was born in Madison County, Kentucky. In 1814, the United States and Britain signed the Treaty of Gnat, which ended the War of 1812 following ratification by both the British Parliament and the U.S. Senate. In 1865, several veterans of the Confederate Army formed a private social club in Pulaski, Tennessee, that was the original version of the Ku Klux Klan. In 1913, 73 people, most of them children, died in a crush of panic after a false cry of fire during a Christmas party for striking miners and their families at the Italian Hall in Calumet, Michigan. In 1914, during World War I, impromptu Christmas truces began to take hold along parts of the Western Front between British and German soldiers. In 1943, President Franklin D. Roosevelt appointed General Dwight D. Eisenhower Supreme Commander of Allied Forces in Europe as part of Operation Overlord. Thought for today. Christmas comes, but once a year is enough. American proverb. Okay. We're going to read one article here before we start the obituaries at 8:30, and this is in the sports. Dodd brings Clear Lake the gift of offensive depth. There's a picture of basketball players. Clear Lake's Darby Dodd, number 12, tries to take a shot at a home game against Webster City on Tuesday, December 17th. Early in the season, the Clear Lake girls basketball team has been a fearsome opponent for other Iowa teams. With offensive weapons up and down the floor, the Lions have proven that they have the ability to put up some crooked numbers. Last year, the squad went 17-5, scoring 1,376 points, and ended the season as the number 6th ranked team in Class 3A. Add to that team, junior Darby Dodd. Dodd leads the team in both total three-pointers and three-point percentage this season, with marks of 20 and 45.5% respectively. But it isn't her sharp shooting abilities that make her an invaluable part of the Lions lineup. The most valuable thing Dodd brings to the Lions is the gift of depth. Dodd spent last season as a member of the Iowa Falls Alden Cadets. She was the team's fourth leading scorer, averaging 10.4 points per game with a team high 38.2% shot from three-point territory. So far this year, Dodd has quickly become a valuable member of the already potent Clear Lake attack with the second most points on the team, along with 18 assists, also tied for second best. She brings another element and brings another weapon that we already had, Clear Lake head coach Bart Smith said. We have some pretty good shooters. She just adds another. She's good from out there. She's got great vision. She's a great teammate, and she's not just a good shooter, but does a lot of other things well, too. Dodd moved to Clear Lake from Iowa Falls over the summer after her father got a new job in town. For Dodd, the transition to a successful team like Clear Lake wasn't too big of an adjustment. Sure, she had to get used to a new school, mesh with her new teammates, and settle into a new town. On the basketball side of things, though, she has had success before. Last season, Dodd's cadet squad went 19-3 and ended the season ranked number 8 in Class 3A. It's a lot of hard work and a lot more fast-paced practices, Dodd said, of joining the Clear Lake team. A lot of people on our team push me to make me an even better player. It's been really great. Along with Dodd, the Lions have one of the state's best players in Sarah Faber, along with plenty of solid role players like Julia Merfield and Caitlin Vanderplug. The blessing of a deep lineup is that no player is asked to do too much. It made our bench really deep, Smith said. It just adds another threat, someone coming off that bench. She knows how to play and knows how to get points. She's an unselfish player. That depth seems to be key to Clear Lake's success so far this season. Aside from Faber, the Lions have several players capable of grabbing rebounds and playing defense. Vanderplug, a senior, leads the team in rebounds with 41, while Faber and junior Chelsea Hulk are tied for second with 28. On offense, Faber leads the team with an average of 18.4 points per game, with Dodd and Hulk second and third with averages of 10.1 and 9. In addition to having a surplus of talented players to put in the lineup, the Lions' fast-paced turnovers focus defense leads to plenty of scoring and offense. We like to get play really fast, get up and guard them tight on full court, Dodd says. When we can get up, press them on full court, and get us steals and layups, that gets a lot of points for us. When we knock down threes, we run the score up pretty quick. So far, the Lions have done just that. Through six games, Clear Lake has averaged 70 points per game and is ranked number 2 in 3A. We have a lot of good shooters on our team, Dodd said. We pass the ball around and see who is open. You never know who is going to be hot some nights. Hit the open man and knock down shots. The Lions will open 2020 on January 3rd with a home game against Algona. And now what we're going to do is we're going to go to the obituaries. Okay. We have several obituaries today. Okay. All right. We're going to start here. I'm just going to read the names. Okay. The first one is Kelly Jo Klatt Amundson, Teresa M. Moore, Benny Leroy Harms, James Verlin Jorgensen, Scott Lee Huntley, Judy A. Linehan, Ruth Marie Tim Groh, Frederick Lyman, Denise Despinez, Shirley V. Tatum, Helen L. Roths, Charles E. Murray, Kenneth W. Gerdes, James Allen Randall, Greg Sobeck. And now I'll read. Oh, there was one more also, sorry. Margie Mag Levon Sheriff. Okay. We're going to start with Margie Mag Levon Sheriff. January 17th, 1925 through December 5th, 2019. Margie Mag Levon Sheriff Johnson died at the Rehabilitation Center of Belmont on December 5th, 2019 in Belmont, Iowa at the age of 94. Mag was born on January 17, 1925 in Belmont, Iowa to her parents Julius and Lily Alstad Johnson. She attended public schools in Belmont. Mag and Donald Red Sheriff were married in 1944. They farmed in the Goodell, Thornton, and Missouri areas until retiring to Belmont in 1980. Mag kept very busy as a homemaker, raising her five children on the farm. She loved baking and cooking and was known for her delicious cakes, angel food and chocolate, candies, especially fudge and bonbons, cookies and pies served with a fresh cup of Folgers coffee. Mag's grandchildren loved to stay with her and Red when she would make their favorite foods specially for them. In accordance with Mag's instructions and desire, there will not be a funeral or memorial service. A private interment with the immediate family will take place at the Belmont Cemetery next spring. Andrew's funeral home in Belmont, Iowa, was in charge. Next, we have Kelly Jo Klatt Amundsen. March 26, 1971 to December 21, 2019. Kelly Jo Klatt Amundsen, 48, of Mason City, Iowa, passed away peacefully surrounded by her husband and six children on Saturday, December 21, 2019 at Mercy One, North Iowa. A visitation will be held on Friday, December 27th, from 4 to 7 p.m. at Fullerton Funeral Home, located 123 2nd Street Southeast, Mason City. A funeral service will be held at 10:30 a.m. with a 1 hour prior visitation on Saturday, December 28th, with Pastor Kevin Jones from Trinity Lutheran Church officiating at Fullerton Funeral Home. Burial will immediately follow at Elmwood St. Joseph Cemetery. An expression of sympathy, memorials may be made in care of the family. Fullerton Funeral Home, located at 123 2nd Street Southeast, Mason City, is in charge of funeral arrangements. Next is Teresa M. Moore. December 5, 1926 to December 21, 2019. Dubuque, Iowa. Teresa M. Moore, 93, of Dubuque, died Saturday, December 21, 2019 at Unity Point Health Finley Hospital. Mass of Christian burial will be 10:30 a.m. Saturday, December 28, at Holy Spirit Parish, Sacred Heart Catholic Church. Reverend Mark Quinnan will officiate. Burial will be in St. Catherine Cemetery. A visitation will be held from 4 to 6 p.m. Friday, December 27th, at the Egloff, Siegert, and Casper Funeral Home and Crematory, located 2659 JFK Road. Teresa was born on December 5, 1926, in St. Catherine, Iowa, the daughter of Peter and Margaret Cass Olinger. She married Milford Moore on February 16, 1952, at St. Patrick's Catholic Church. Teresa worked at the Dubuque Packing House. After she had children, she stayed home to raise her family. She was a member of the Holy Spirit Parish Sacred Heart Catholic Church. A Teresa Moore Memorial Fund has been established. Next, we have Benny Leroy Harms. Benny Leroy Harms, 82, of Mason City, passed into the arms of his Savior, Jesus Christ, on Saturday, December 21st, 2019, after many years of suffering from COPD and sugar diabetes. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. on Saturday, December 28th, at the St. Paul Lutheran Church, located at 329 East State Street, Mason City, with the Reverend Matthew Mooters officiating. Burial will follow in Elmwood St. Joseph Cemetery, Mason City. Visitation with public viewing will be held Friday evening, December 27th, from 5 to 7 p.m. at Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel, located at 126 3rd Street Northeast, Mason City, and will resume 1 hour prior to the funeral service at the church on Saturday. Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel is in charge of funeral arrangements. James Verlin Jorgensen. James Verlin Jorgensen, 87, of Hampton, died on December 22, 2019, after battling respiratory ailments for several years. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, December 27, 2019, at Trinity Lutheran Church in Hampton. Visitation will be held from 4 until 7 p.m. Thursday, December 26th, at Trinity Lutheran Church in Hampton. Burial will take place at the St. Paul's Lutheran Church Cemetery in Latimer. Next, we have Scott Lee Huntley. July 15, 1957 to December 12, 2019. Scott Lee Huntley, 62, of Quartzsite, Arizona, died Thursday, December 12th, at his home. Funeral services will be 1:30 p.m. Monday, December 23rd, at Ward Van Slyke Colonial Chapel, 101 North 4th Street, Clear Lake. Burial will be at Clear Lake Cemetery in Clear Lake. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to the service at the funeral home on Monday. Scott was born July 15, 1957, the son of Keith and Dolores Burns Huntley in Mason City. He married Elsa Rigsby on June 20, 1987, and to that union, 3 children were born: Alexander, Aaron, and Alyssa. Scott graduated from Clear Lake High School in 1975. Primary throughout his life, he worked as an independent contractor. With his construction background, he loved completing home improvement projects and helping others when needed. He was a fan of all sports, especially NASCAR and football. While playing football, he earned the nickname Scooter because he was so fast. He also liked telling stories, sharing memories, listening to music, and playing the guitar. Ward Van Slyke Colonial Chapel, located at 101 North 4th Street in Clear Lake, is in charge of arrangements. Judy A. Linehan, May 4, 1954 to December 18, 2019. Clear Lake. Judy A. Linehan, 65, of Clear Lake, died Wednesday, December 18, 2019, at Mayo Clinic Hospital, Methodist Campus in Rochester, Minnesota. Funeral services will be 10:30 Monday, December 23rd, at St. Patrick's Catholic Church, 1001 9th Avenue South, Clear Lake, with Reverend John Gossman officiating. Interment will be at Clear Lake Cemetery in Clear Lake. Visitation will be from 2 to 4 p.m. Sunday, December 22nd, at Ward Van Slyke Colonial Chapel, 101 North 4th Street in Clear Lake. For many years, Tom and Judy have brought school supplies for first and second grade students to Clear Creek Elementary School in Clear Lake. To continue honoring Judy, her family suggests that memorial contributions be made to Tom Linehan, who will personally keep this tradition alive in Judy's memory. Judy was born May 4, 1954, the daughter of Arnold Dutch and Madeline Torch McCauley Dutcher in Mason City. She married Tom Linehan on April 28, 1973 at St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Clear Lake. A graduate of Ventura High School, class of 1972, Judy began helping raise her young family until they entered grade school. She later began working at Mercy Family Credit Union in Mason City, Shukai Chevrolet in Mason City, and then pursued her dream of opening her own gift shop, J Avenue, in Clear Lake. Judy enjoyed playing bingo, cards, taking cruises to the Caribbean, and traveling to Arizona every winter, where she'd attend several spring training baseball games. She always enjoyed entertaining, but Christmas was her favorite time of the year. Most of all, she cherished time spent with her husband, children, and grandchildren. Ward Van Slyke Colonial Chapel, located 101 North 4th Street in Clear Lake, is in charge of arrangements. Ruth Marie Timgrow. Ruth Marie Timgrow, 92, formerly of Clear Lake and Thornton, passed away peacefully December 21st at the Israel Hospice House in Ames, Iowa. A gathering of family and friends will be held December 26th from 5 to 7 p.m. at St. Patrick's Catholic Church Parish Center, located 1001 9th Avenue South, Clear Lake, Iowa. Visitation will conclude with a prayer service and memory sharing at 7 p.m. The funeral mass will be 11 a.m. on December 27th at St. Patrick's Catholic Church. Visitation at the church will begin at 10 a.m. Ward Van Slyke Colonial Chapel, located at 101 North 4th Street, Clear Lake, is in charge of arrangements. Next, we have Frederick Lyman, December 4th, 1924 to December 21st, 2019. Frederick L. Don Lyman of Rochester passed away peacefully on Friday, December 21st, 2019 at Pine Haven Care Center in Pine Island, Minnesota. Fred was born December 4th, 1924 in Mason City to Frederick O. and Marie Fox Lyman. He graduated from Mason City High School in 1942 at the age of 17 and was too young to enlist in the Army. He instead attended a special youth training program at Drake University in Des Moines and enlisted at age 18. In the Army, he continued training in radio and pre-radar at North Dakota State University for 3 months and then for 9 months at University of Kentucky. He eventually ended up in Pine Camp, New York. He was one of 1,100 men interviewed and hand-picked by the colonel leading a unit designated as the 3132 Signal Corps. 50 years after World War II, our family and the rest of the world found out the real name of the company was the 23rd Headquarters Special Troops, known as the Ghost Army. They were a top secret unit involved in sonic, visual, and radio deception. He was grateful to participate in an honor flight to Washington, D.C. with his son as chaperone. After the war, he returned to Mason City, where he met and married Juliana Lee on November 21, 1947, in the Little Brown Church in Nashua, Iowa. In 1950, Fred was hired by Interstate Power Company in Mason City as a drafting clerk. He enjoyed a 38-year career with Interstate Power, advancing to become area manager in Northwood, Iowa, assistant district manager in Clinton, Iowa, district manager in Decorah, Iowa, and then returned as district manager in Clinton, where he retired in 1989. After retirement, he and Julie moved back to Mason City for 10 years and then to Rochester in 2001 to be near family. Fred was heavily involved in his community as a member of various clubs, Elks, Lions, VFW, Rotary, Masons, and Chambers of Commerce. He served as president and chairman of several of these organizations, along with his church boards. He was a water safety instructor for the Red Cross and served as regional chairman in Northeast Iowa for the Red Cross. He served as a board member of the local bank. He won the Boss of the Year Award presented by the Junior Chamber of Commerce in Decorah. Fred is survived by his son. He loved spending time with his family, fishing, hunting, swimming, and reading. He enjoyed having coffee Sunday mornings with his son and wife during her 3.5-year battle with cancer. He continued the Sunday morning coffee routine for several years with his son. The funeral for Frederick L. Lyman will be held on Friday, December 27th at 11 a.m. in River Park Chapel at Mackin Funeral Home in Rochester, Minnesota, with Reverend Lester Hornfelt officiating. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to the service on Friday. Burial will be at Memorial Park Cemetery in Mason City at a later date. The family would like to thank the staff of Evergreen Place and Pine Haven Care Center for their loving care. Heartland Hospice also provided comforting care his last 3 months. Online condolences are welcome at www.mackinfuneralhome.com. Next is Denise B. Despinez, Kensett. Denise B. Despinez, 68, of Kensett, passed away Sunday, December 22, 2019, at Mercy One North Iowa Hospice in Mason City. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Monday, December 30, 2019, at Major Erickson Funeral Home, 111 North Pennsylvania Avenue, Mason City. Burial will be at Elmwood St. Joseph Cemetery in Mason City. Visitation will be held from 3 to 5 p.m. Sunday, December 29th at the Major Erickson Funeral Home and will continue 1 hour prior to services at the funeral home on Monday. Major Erickson Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. Next, we have Shirley V. Tatum, January 15, 1923 to December 20, 2019. Shirley V. Tatum, 96, of Fort Dodge and formerly Mason City, passed away Friday, December 20th at the Fort Dodge Health and Rehabilitation Center, surrounded by her family. A funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. Friday, December 27th at Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel, located at 126 3rd Street Northeast, Mason City, with student pastor Sue Sierra officiating. Burial will be in the Memorial Park Cemetery, Mason City, Iowa. Visitation and public viewing will be held 1 hour prior to the funeral service at the chapel. Shirley Virginia Martin was born January 15, 1923, in Mason City, the daughter of Elmer and Laura Nash Martin. Growing up in Mason City, Shirley attended and graduated from Mason City High School. Following graduation, Shirley married the love of her life, James H. Tatum, on December 1, 1942. The couple was blessed with two daughters, Virginia and Candy. In June of 1977, Jim passed away. Shirley worked for the Mason City School District for 28 years. She served as the school cafeteria manager at both Hoover Elementary and Monroe Junior High until her retirement in 1988. Shirley was a lifelong member of St. James Lutheran Church, serving in the church circles, altar guild, and music activities. She greatly enjoyed being a part of the quilting group, creating blankets to be donated to needy families. Shirley was a loyal member of the Mason City VFW Auxiliary, serving as auxiliary president and coordinated countless funeral lunches at the VFW. Shirley and Jim enjoyed boating, skiing, fishing, and relaxing at their cottage on Clear Lake. When the girls were young, the family took many camping fishing trips to Minnesota with Jim's fellow plumbing friends. After retirement, Shelley took up golfing with her friends and looked forward to her daily 3-mile walk to McDonald's for coffee. She also enjoyed playing dice and cards, belonging to a 500 card club for many years. Family was the highlight of Shirley's life. She was a dedicated and loving wife, mother, and grandmother. She looked forward each year to the Elmer Martin family reunion, which has continued for 68 consecutive years in Mason City. Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel, located at 126 3rd Street Northeast in Mason City, is in charge of arrangements. Helen L. Roth. Helen L. Roth, 89, of Clemmy, Iowa, died Saturday, December 21st, at the Concord Care Center, Garner, Iowa. Services will be Friday, December 27, 2019, at the Andrews Funeral Home, located 528 East Main Street, Clemmy, Iowa. Pastor David Bugard will be officiating. Visitation will be at the Andrews Funeral Home in Clemmy on Thursday from 5 to 7 p.m. and 1 hour prior to the services on Friday. Anderson Funeral Home, Clemmy, Iowa, is in charge of arrangements. Charles E. Murray, December 30, 1925 to December 21, 2019. Charles E. Murray, 93, of Mason City, passed away peacefully on Saturday, December 21st, at the Good Shepherd Health Center. Per his wishes, his body was donated to Mayo Clinic Department of Anatomy in Rochester, Minnesota. Private memorial services will be held at a later date. Arrangements are with Major Erickson Funeral Home and Crematory. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to the Salvation Army, Hawkeye Harvest Food Bank, or Mercy One North Iowa Hospice. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.majorericksonfuneralhome.com. Charles was born December 30, 1925 in Davenport, Iowa, to Clay E. and Betty Brown Murray. He was a devoted husband of Indus Wiley Murray for 67 years before she died in December of 2015, devoted father to 6 children, cherished grandfather to 10 grandchildren and 11 great-grandchildren. Charles grew up on a farm in Davenport, Iowa. He attended country school and graduated from Davenport High School in 1943. He enlisted in the U.S. Army during World War II, serving with the 97th Infantry in Germany, France, Czechoslovakia, and later in occupied Japan. After the war, he attended St. Ambrose College. He married the love of his life, Indus, on June 13, 1948. Charles had a long career with Seed Company in Davenport, Sterling, Illinois, and serving as general manager in Mason City. He was a longtime member of the Mason City School Board, where he served as president and Rotary International. Major Erickson Funeral Home and Crematory, located at 111 North Pennsylvania Avenue, Mason City, is in charge of arrangements. Kenneth W. Gerdes, January 20, 1957 to October 11, 2019. On Friday, October 11, 2019, Kenneth W. Gerdes, loving brother and friend, passed away at the age of 62. A graveside memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. Friday, December 27th at the Pleasant Valley Township Cemetery in Swaledale, Iowa. Ken was born January 20th, 1957 in Mason City to Bill and June Gerdes. He graduated from the Sheffield Chapin High School. At the time of his death, he was residing in Ankeny, Iowa, and was employed by Federal Express Freight. Ken enjoyed spending time with friends. He had a passion for old cars and trucks. He was known for his quick wit and infectious smile. Online condolences can be made at www.memorialservicesofiowa.com. James Allen Randall, November 24, 1935 to December 17, 2019. Stuart Vant, Wisconsin. James Allen Randall, 84, received the promise of eternal life on Wednesday, December 18, 2019. He was born in Mason City, Iowa on November 24, 1935, son of the late Victor and Marie Niesinger Randall. Jim was united in marriage to the love of his life, the former Mary Lou Quintero, on August 11, 1956 at Holy Family Church in Mason City. Jim graduated from St. Joseph High School in Mason City in 1953. Jim attended St. John's University in Collegeville, Minnesota, and then the Layton School of Art in Milwaukee. He was director of purchasing at Crane Manufacturing in Cudahy for several years, a partner at Muir Company in West Allis, and then president of the Randall Company in Caledonia until his retirement in 1999. Jim was a faithful member of St. James Catholic Church in Franklin for many years, serving on the parish council and as a lector until they moved to Florida in 2004. He was an artistic person who enjoyed drawing, painting, and calligraphy. Jim loved fishing and golfing. He was an avid Packers, Brewers, Bucks, and Badger fan. He was known for his wonderful sense of humor. Above all, Jim loved his family dearly, especially his grandchildren, and will be missed by all who loved him. A memorial mass celebrating Jim's life will be held on December 27, 2019 at 11:30 at St. Lucie Catholic Church, 3101 Drexel Avenue, Racine, Wisconsin, with Reverend Javier Gutavia officiating. Visitation will be from 10:30 a.m. until the time of the Mass. In accordance with Jim's wishes, a burial will take place in Mason City in the spring. The family would like to thank all who have taken care of Jim in the past few years, all of the doctors, RNs, PCAs at Ascension All Saints Hospital Medical Group and Lakeshore at Siena, the staff at People Care and Killary Court for all their assistance, care, and support. Dragel Langenford Funeral Home and Crematory, located in Mount Pleasant, Wisconsin, is in charge of arrangements. Last, we have Greg Sobeck, Clear Lake. Greg Sobeck, 54, formerly of Clear Lake, Iowa, most recently a resident of Harmony House, Waterloo, Iowa, died Sunday, December 22nd at Mercy One Hospital in Waterloo, Iowa. Funeral arrangements are incomplete with the Andrews Funeral Home out of Clemmy, Iowa. That concludes the obituaries. I'm quickly, today's weather is mostly cloudy with a wind south 6 to 12 miles per hour with a high of 43 degrees. Tonight will be overcast with a shower late, wind south to southeast 4 to 8 miles per hour with a high of 32 degrees. This brings us to the end of the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for December 24th, 2019, Christmas Eve. Your reader has been Vicki. This broadcast has come to you through a partnership between the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service and 97.9 FM KCMR Radio. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of IRIS or KCMR. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned for today's reading of the Des Moines Register. You are listening to IRIS, your 24-hour radio reading service. Have a great day, and Merry Christmas to all.